Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Hello and welcome to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio, which comes to you to connect politics and finance, humanity and world peace, and the arts in a way that encourages all to think for themselves so the best political and life choices are made by all. With artistic overtones, the Reasonable Voice is an advocate for a peaceful and prosperous world filled with creativity and political unity. Welcome, please, my guests this morning, the Reverend Elisheva Clegg and her husband, Reverend T. Wade Clegg. Good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, Marcello.
Good morning. How are you?
Wonderful. And it's just perfect talking to the two of you again. We're going to give a little background for more than I just have. I mean, I know that I should mention that Reverend Wade Clegg is a U.S. Air Force retired officer and businessman, broadcaster, organic farmer, and that Reverend Elisheva Clegg, I love her name, was ordained at the Cathedral of St. John the Divine in New York, and she has been the volunteer chaplain for the University of Virginia Medical Center. And the big subject, I guess, of the day that we will certainly cover, at least in the second segment, is about the charity they have formed called the Interfaith, the Interfaith Humanitarian Sanctum, which is a non-profit. Nobody makes money, but they assist financially with patients who come from various areas to the University of Virginia Medical Center who cannot afford not just the hospital care, but because they come from distances, they have to still eat and have a place to stay and maybe travel expenses, maybe even copay. All of that we're going to get to. But first, I want to start off this morning getting a little personal with Reverend Wade and Reverend Elisheva.
How personal are you speaking, Marcello?
I'm sorry?
How personal do you want?
Well, I want you to make me laugh. I'm in a pretty, I'm kind of politically annoyed this morning. You know, it's not like it's a new issue, but the difference is, in talking to you, I'm reminded of the differences between the euphemisms, Park Avenue, Wall Street, and Main Street, and how you and what you do is a way to try and alleviate that. You know, if we just all try and fight at the top of the problem, we probably won't get as much ahead as if different groups of us, couples, married teams, small groups, political activists, whatever, go after the inside issues and sort of nibble away at the foundation that has created such an economic discrepancy since World War II. But anyway, I don't want to ramble. I do want to get personal, and I mean by that, when did you meet? How long have you been married? When did this idea for the IHS start, that kind of thing. Your monologue, go. Or duet.
You know, you're talking to two very distinctively different people who
yes.
live with each other now for 42 years and
wow.
Married all that time, too, just in case one yeah. needs clarification. We met in Germany, and my version is a little bit different than Elisheva. I said, well, I was there in uniform, and she spotted me and followed me around till I couldn't resist. I think it actually happened a little differently, but I was fortunate to be in the military for 21 years and enjoyed it, spent time in Southeast Asia, came back to Germany, came back home, retired later, became an organic farmer for a number of years, and dabbled in business wherever I was appropriately matched with making money and sometimes not. But those things kind of get along. And then the ministry came along when Ella Sheba, who's been involved with religious study for such a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't live with somebody with the influence she has over me without getting involved. So we've done so many things together, and it's that togetherness that makes us vital, makes us appreciate daily life, and to be able to be as generous as we possibly can. We've commented recently when looking over what we've been doing for the last 5 or 6 years and her involvement with the UVA Hospital Chaplaincy Program, where this was all stimulated locally in Charlottesville,
mm-hmm.
and just said, you know, this is probably the most important thing that we've ever done.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the category we're in now, and we're very fortunate to be able to do that. So many that we deal with or try to assist just don't have that opportunity.
Yes.
I'm a guy who's retired military, who has the best insurance in the world, and I'm around people who can't get it.
Yes.
And I'm around people who discourage others having it, which for me is a real downer. So,
yes.
Politically, I have some strong feelings about how you help people.
Mm-hmm.
Inquire always about where they're coming from, what their culture is, who they are. It's about what they need.
Yes.
And that you have the ability to make them feel like you are able to feel because of what you already have.
Exactly.
It's a simple summation, but that's some of it.
That's excellent. Ella Sheba, I wonder if we can hear your version of how you met.
Well, I will not elaborate on the version how we met. It's a little different, but it was still very exciting. As to what we do right now, I needed to go to the chaplaincy program to finish my master's degree in pastoral counseling, and I'm very, very happy I did it, because counseling patients in a hospital is quite different from counseling patients in an office.
Yes.
And while in the hospital, I realized that although the university hospital is one of the best hospitals with very dedicated staff, doctors, nurses, social workers, I mean, you can't ask for a better facility, there are unmet needs that the public is not aware of. And as Wade stated, I saw people sleeping night after night with their children in the garage, who had a loved one in the hospital who came from a long distance, or I had people sitting night after night in the waiting room, waiting for the loved one to live or die, and eating crackers. And those are people who are not homeless or don't want to work.
Mm-hmm.
Those are people who have been out of work or for whatever reason do not have the money to travel a few hundred miles to Virginia from 1 minute to the next to Charlottesville. And most of them have, like one social worker stated very well, she said, we are fortunate that the University of Virginia is one of two hospitals in Virginia with our state-supported discount system. We can work with medical bills and prescriptions, but if a person cannot afford to get here or stay overnight, then all the benefits don't help. So meaning, yes, the treatment is free, but what if you cannot get here? What if your caregiver, your loved one, doesn't have a place to stay?
Yes.
Now, I ask, what about a hospitality house? And the fact is, the hospitality house has about 60 places. Most of them are all the time full.
Mm-hmm.
If you have children under 18, you cannot stay there. If you have a cold, you cannot stay there. And the Ronald McDonald House only takes people whose child is the patient. So that leaves a gap.
Yes.
Of people that, you know, won't rush to Charlottesville to be with their loved one, and or cancer patients who have to come for treatment.
Mm.
They are outpatients. What do? They have to be the night before the treatment here, so they sleep in their car. And this was something that we could not allow to go on. So we formed a charity, not knowing what it really takes. But we did it, and I'm proud to say in the 5 years that we formed the charity, we never had to say no to a request from a social worker. And everything goes to the social worker. They'll check the people, they'll make sure they need help, they contact us day or night, and we facilitate the hotel room, or the food, or the copay, or the baby car seat who cannot leave the hospital if there is no car seat. So we are proud to say we have not had to say no yet, and I hope it remains like this.
That I'm so appreciative of your explaining that to us, Ella Shiva, and I want to get to some of the examples that you have seen out in the community that really typify why an organization such as your charity, again, that's the Interfaith Humanitarian Sanctum, it is nonprofit, it's non-religious, no one is paid, everyone volunteers, and you also work with a local pianist, yes, Sam McLawhorn, I believe?
Yeah, Sam McLawhorn is our third partner, who is an incredible, incredible, giving, compassionate human being. In fact, every second Saturday in the month, he pays at Selena's in Charlottesville and earns money for the charity. He handles all our websites and whatever needs to be done.
Wow.
So we are the three stooges.
Three stooges for good.
And one of those stooges is very musically inclined. As a matter of fact, Sam is probably one of the best keyboardists in this town, and I kid you not.
Mm.
His professionalism from time playing bands in Chicago, et cetera, is phenomenal. And he's put himself out there for people who do private parties at all to assist the charity. So it's one of those things, if anybody ever needs a good keyboardist for an evening, you can go to charity. He's open to that.
Oh, well, let's give his contact information if you have it.
Well, it's IHS. Everything comes into our email, ihsanctum@gmail.com. That's ihsanctum, S-A-N-C-T-U-M, @gmail.com. And just say whatever you like to say, and we'll answer.
Fantastic. And it may be for any reason, let's mention some of them. Clearly, maybe you are in a position to volunteer your services. Maybe you are in a position to make a financial contribution. Or maybe you want to hire someone to officiate at a funeral or wedding. And or maybe you need a keyboardist to play at funeral, wedding, or restaurant, or convention. Does that give a good...
Correct.
Okay.
Indeed. The one thing we can never be without enough participation. It just won't happen. But everybody is in good company with the folks who are helping us. I just like to mention a few folks to give some diversity here. Of course, we depend on many different churches, and we're talking about all kinds of churches. Mm-hmm. We have the Antioch Baptist Church out in the county made a collection of a few hundred dollars a few weeks ago, and or it's been a month now, and we were able to buy food and four or five car seats.
Wow.
The LDS churches continue to participate. The first participation by a church, and it was the only church for about 2 years, was a little Catholic church in Wise, Virginia, nearly 300 miles away.
Wow.
They started sending $50 as long as they could, and they did for four straight years, so they had a project they had to get back on. And it's because some of their congregation were among those underfunded people who came to the University of Virginia for assistance. And they were also at the, what is called the remote area clinic, which is a free clinic down in Wise on the fairground where thousands of people turn out once a year. University of Virginia medical doctors and VCU send dentists down there for 3 days. And thousands of people show up for the first time they have been examined for anything. And many of those people sometimes will come in and find out they're at stage four, this and that, and need immediate treatment. And guess where they have to come? They have to come to Charlottesville.
Oh, wow.
So,
but they only come if they have transportation. They only come if they have somebody to take them and have a place to stay.
Yeah, there are many planning aspects that a social worker has to take care of in order for that to happen. I just throw out some of those things. The Louisa Scouts, twice, 2 months out of the year, have built meals for us. We have been so fortunate to get grants and assistance. The BAML Works Fund of Dave Matthews Band here in the Charlotte Area Community Foundation, we found a check in the mail just 2 weeks ago for $10,000 to go toward the food program. That's the third straight year. And
wow.
It's so appreciated.
Wow.
I know what is not known, that we deliver about 250 to 300 full-day 1 gallon meal packages to the hospital every month to be handed out to patients and caregivers. And we supply the food to the hospitality house. So that makes a big difference when you're already sitting there and you're sad, you're depressed, you're sick. And now you're humiliated because you have to ask for food or a place to stay. This is not how people should treat people. I believe in every faith, somewhere it says, that we are responsible for our brother. And that seems impolitic to get lost. And that is something that makes me angry. And Wade has to remind me quite often when I lose my temper. And I'm really known as the elephant in the porcelain store. I get away with saying, well, my English is not good enough. I didn't mean to say it. But yes, I meant to say it. And
yes.
You know, that's, so he reminds me. He says, Reverend, be careful what you say. But sometimes it is hard not to say anything when you see, like you mentioned, you have people standing in the drugstore who have to make the decision, should they pick up the medication or put some of them back so they can pay the electric bill.
But you know, there's an input, if I may. This is a food program, which is one of the categories, which people don't have to ask.
Yes.
The social workers, chaplains in the hospital, sometimes the guards got on the door, they'll notice something going on in ER or whatever. Somebody's been there for all day and maybe from out of town and just sitting there looking like they need somebody to
yes.
talk to them. And that's when people move in and say, you know, social worker on a certain floor, why don't you... are down in ER.
Yes.
Maybe you want to check out and see if these folks have some needs, just like chaplains do.
Yes.
The same thing is true at hospitality house. When Mary Jackson over there, who's a manager, knows in advance that somebody's coming in there, they can barely afford $1 or $10 a night,
mm-hmm.
and they're in the same position of not having anything to eat, then those people who are staff at the hospitality house reach out and say, would you like something from the refrigerator?
Yes.
Well, it has to be there. That's the whole point.
That's the point. And I was just going to, wanted to ask about you've sort of touched on that and have also given credit for other organizations in the area who are trying to be a part of the service to help others when they most need it. But so how do you get involved in organizations like the Interfaith Humanitarian Sanctum? Does a social worker call you and say, we have a family coming in and we're going to be treating the child or the mother or father, but we need your help in getting them a place to stay? Or what's the logistics?
Yeah. Sure, let me maybe give a little background. The social workers have a form online, and we were allowed this opportunity, and I was delighted because it had to be this way. The social work manager at the time allowed us to be accessed by the 50 social workers. There are 50 people or more in that organization within the hospital who take care of patients and all the needs around their medical treatment, getting here, how to support it, insurance, the whole thing. And one of those things when they recognize people coming from a distance and they say, well, I don't know where I can afford to stay here or there. If they're in that category of what would be underfunded, pay raise one, it's called, then the social worker will know, and she'll try to put them up in hospitality house or other charity organizations that may have an opportunity. But there was no one who was consistently available to them at the bottom of the chart that you could always depend on. So we became that, or we're trying to maintain that. And so they just simply call any time of the day and say, you know, Wade, we've got a patient here that's just come in. It's 5:30 in the afternoon. The doctor's going to need to see this patient in the morning. They could be here with a child. They just came up quickly. And we will simply look over our hotel list, some generous hotels who help us with discounts, and we'll book a room and call back with a reservation number in 10 minutes, and they're off and running to a place to stay. And she'll also ask them, do you have anything to eat for tonight? And if they don't, then she'll go to the cabinet in social work and pull out a couple of full-day meal packets
mm-hmm.
and give it to them to take over for microwaving.
Fantastic.
So in general, it's about half and half. Half of the people will show up at the last minute, they may have misconstrued when they were supposed to be here, but now they're here. And the other ones, of course, they're planned many weeks in advance or coming in. And there's just no room in hospitality house. Or they may have a MRSA, a disease contagion that can't be allowed in a place where lots of other patients are being housed. So those are the two areas of which we're called on the most. And it's lodging. It's food. It may be a copay.
Mm-hmm.
It may be somebody's leaving the hospital, is going 200 miles home, and they really need this medicine to take with them.
Yes.
And as little as $2 or $3 on occasion, up to, you know, like $100. But $2 or $3, when you hear one of those, that's truly indigent. And we will get on the phone and spend a half an hour to arranging to pay that $2 by credit card,
mm-hmm.
and give them the information so that that person can literally go over and pick up a medicine to go home.
Wow.
So those are the categories. And the infant car seats, I'll just throw that in. That
Let's talk about that after the break. We need to take a break
sure.
now. But I was going to ask you about that. This is the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. My guests today are the Reverend Elisheva Clegg and her husband, Reverend T. Wade Clegg. And we're talking about many things, but certainly the needs of people who come to or sent to or recommended to by other hospitals and facilities and doctors to come to the University of Virginia Medical Center for treatment, but the medical center can't cover the costs of their lodging or food while they're there, except for the patient that's actually in the hospital. And that's where the two Reverends Clegg step in, and we're going to come back and talk more about that. But first, we're going to hear from our technical support, creative catalyst, and spoken word poet, Mr. Bernard Hankins. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, yo, look, this is Earth Ethereal. Verses are lyrical. Some people research empirical data to find the meaning to the matter. We all just want meaning and to matter. Hey, yo, look, this is Earth Ethereal, rebirth and spiritual. Some people seek in their churches for miracles to find the meaning to these matters. We all just want meaning and to matter. She knows the secret laws of attraction, cause and reaction, and she wears rabbit paws as a fashion. She's into herbs and nature, supernatural, superstitious, super religious. What other people see as crazy, she just sees as true to her convictions. A combination of psychology and psychics, astrology and cosmopolitan advice tips. She finds God in everything. She's looking for meaning. Stars. A professor, a naturalist, a humanitarian. No time for family. He's preoccupied with his occupation at the planetary. Science and religion have no business together. The universe is governed by laws, not by a god who controls the weather. And there's no laws of secret attraction. Everything has an opposite and equal reaction. He doesn't find God in anything, but he's looking for meaning. The stars.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. My guests today are Reverend Elisheva Clegg and her husband, Reverend T. Wade Clegg. Both are involved with Interfaith Humanitarian Sanctum. They actually are the founders. It is an organization that, with the help of Sam McLawhorn, a pianist in Charlottesville, the three are working together, and it helps the underfunded. But I want to get to a 21st century definition of underfunded. But first, I had to cut off Wade at the end of the last segment. So you've mentioned these car seats a number of times and the all-day meal package. Can you tell us what they are and how you provide them?
Sure. A social worker in pediatrics had called us one day, and she said, you know, I've got a situation here. Every time that we're ready to release a baby, by law, you've got to have a car seat. And a hospital can only release someone with an item that's new. They can't take a chance on somebody dropping off a thrift shop item, which would be great if the person before they came picked up a thrift shop item, but that doesn't always happen, mm-hmm. and maybe they couldn't even afford that. So she simply said, we need some assistance here so the doctors and the nurses don't have to fill up a basket and run to Walmart and buy the cheapest seat they can find. I said, I think we can help with that. And what started out 2 years ago with what they thought would be 30, I added up last night in 2003, we provided 63 infant car seats.
Wow.
And these things run anywhere. We get pretty good prices, but from $30 up to $75. And it's not inexpensive. We mm-hmm. we received a small grant, which was very helpful, from the Junior League of Charlottesville for $750. And so that helped us a bit there. But those are the kind of things that people can help with. It's best, truly, that we receive funds so that we can buy bulk, and meaning four or five at a time,
sure.
and get the best prices. But the other item, which is in this category, the full-day meal packets, which we've been talking about,
mm-hmm.
that came about four years ago. Our initial things were about lodging, and then the food aspect came up. The same people who need lodging also have to eat.
Yes.
And the people who were looking at that were saying, you know, we've got these parents who are sitting in NICU with their children who are waiting for transplants, and they have horrendous diseases, and they're here for weeks and sometimes months,
yes.
waiting and being treated. And they look worse than their children.
Mm.
And it was reality going on that they had balance back at home. We're talking about very average income people.
Sure.
And they're having to support children and family back home, and they're having to stay locally in the Ronald McDonald House or hospitality house, and quite literally ignore themselves. So the nutritional thing was very high on the list for the social worker, Teresa Bevan. So when she asked for that, we immediately got involved. And some of that information, if you went to our website, Interfaith Humanitarian Sanctum, and you clicked around to the blog and just went back, scrolled back to 2010, you'd see these letters, which would really emotionally move you.
Mm.
And they're still online for people to take note of. The full-day meal packet is online also. It's on the home page of the website. It says food program. Under that are the two, meaning hospitality house, how you get involved with that, and also a guide which you can download on how to make a meal and what needs to go in it. And then it's a matter of just calling us and say, you know, we've got these packages in the car, come get them, and I'll be there. We meet quite often in Charlottesville at Barracks Road at Hot Cakes, have a coffee, cheesecake with people who like to understand what we're doing. That's mm-hmm. our office away from home. We won't talk to anybody without coffee and cheesecake.
Yeah.
So, and it's our pleasure to take care of that. But those are the opportunities we offer, and we're happy to come out and speak to people, whether it's churches or scouts or even home groups. These little, you know, one of the most fascinating things is being asked to come to a preschool,
yes.
and sit down with 4- and 5-year-olds and ask them, do they know what they're doing? And they say, we're giving.
Oh, wow.
We're giving. And you know, it just kind of stops you in your tracks. And
yeah.
you say, you know, that's exactly what you're doing.
Exactly.
And I'll maybe spend 2 minutes talking to them. They'll be thrilled. They start making things. And that's how you get involved. And that's how children get involved in families and those kind of groups. So that's it in a quick nutshell.
That was excellent. And I just want to add or ask one more thing, because in our last segment, you said that the social worker at the hospital might go over to someone and say, do you need something to eat? And the answer is yes. They go to the cabin and they pull out one of these full-day meal packages. Does that come from you?
Yes. All of them come from us.
Wow.
It's approached quite literally in a much more subtle way when somebody notices that these folks are so aware in the hospital,
yes.
about who's in and around. And people sitting in waiting rooms for extensive times, usually a chaplain will sit down and communicate and just during the course of the conversation realize what's going on and say, you know, how are you handling your meals while you're that kind of thing? And you'll get feedback. And if they sense something where somebody really is struggling, they just have to go to a social worker and say, you might want to check these folks. Her name is so-and-so.
Yes.
And see if she has a need. And then that social worker simply can go up to the social office, access the cabinet, and get a meal for that person or who's ever accompanying her.
Wow, that is so beautiful. It is so, and that the children are learning how to give. And, you know, before we forget, so, and we'll repeat all of this at the end, but before we forget, could you give your telephone number that can be called? And we'll stress again, it is, you do work 24/7, but
yes,
you're not necessarily asking for general conversation overnight, but could you give your telephone number for us?
Absolutely, and you can call me any time of day. It doesn't mean I'm awake and hearing you, but
yes.
The one thing that I will do is I'll actually come alive over a period of minutes and, and take notes. So if you're just calling about a general situation, believe me, I'm up till midnight, so it's not a problem. Call. The number is 434-589-4864. That's 434-589-4864. And whoever answers, it'll be myself or Ella Shiva, and we'll certainly talk about it and respond and hopefully get an email so we can go kind of back and forth with specifics.
Sure.
I have attachments that allow people to really know immediately what we're about.
Fantastic. Now, if I may, as I sort of alluded to at the beginning, if there are political issues that affect us all, and certainly since 2008 and the recession, and we throw around words and phrases and euphemisms like Wall Street and versus Main Street and Park Avenue versus the Alphabet City and so forth, but I see, in part at least, what you do is a much more, let's not say more, it just is a good, healthy, practical, pragmatic, and necessary way to try and assist those who, in some cases, have suddenly found themselves in a very different economic situation. Do you run into that there, some of the people that you help weren't people you needed to help 10 years ago? Is that ever the case? I guess my question is there a new, with the economic times, is there a new category, if you will, of underserved?
I would say so, definitely. You meet people now, and I think we talked about it a moment ago. I go to the pharmacist, and I have an elderly lady standing in front of me. It's nicely dressed and has a home here at the lake, but she has to make a decision which of the medications to pick up, because it's either pay her electric bill or the copay or the, you know, or the whole fee for the medication. And in talking sometimes to these people, 6, 7, 8 years ago, or just a couple of years ago, they were not in this position.
Yes.
So why are they now? I have, you know, we could spend hours, and if you allow me to ramble on, then you won't have a radio show.
you go on.
It is very frustrating, and I get very angry. I just like to, maybe if anybody who is a politician listens, like to remind them, you come naked in this world, you go naked. You can take your title, your money, your achievements, your political standing, all that means nothing when you leave. What's important when you leave is, what did you do for humanity?
Yes. Yes.
And maybe if we can get this across to Congress, I don't know if it makes any difference.
I think it's a multi-level war, if you will. It's we certainly have to, as I write and tell people all the time, it's great to click with your mouse on a petition, but it's not as powerful, as I've been told by congressmen, if you show up at their office. And of course, showing up at the ballot box is a big thing too. So we do need to remind the politicians who are so influenced by any number of sources of great wealth that are accumulating even more wealth than ever before, that it is the middle class. It is a strong foundation, economic foundation of a middle class that can buy and sell and, you know, and rent and whatever. These are the people that keep the ship afloat. And if we ignore them to death financially, then we are hurting all that we think and want and wish America is. And I wish politicians again and those of great wealth could see that you can't beat God giving, as my grandmama used to say, and I found that out so many times. You just can't. So if you share in some degree, no one is asking that you give away everything. I mean, St. Francis asked that, but that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying there needs to be some equality financially. There needs to be some sharing. There needs to be a recognition that America has changed, and it's not so much because, as people like to say, everything changed with 9/11. Everything changed with 9/12 when 9/11 and other things were used as an excuse to prioritize how our government and indeed corporate America treats the everyday hardworking American family and those without a family, you know. So what are your thoughts? I know you've given us great examples about what you do here in Charlottesville. Where do people come from to benefit from the University of Virginia Medical Center and from your Interfaith Humanitarian Sanctum? How far do some of them travel?
Well, I did a quick look over the last couple of years of the average miles that a patient comes for assistance at UVA Medical Center, and it turned out to be an average of 178 miles.
Wow.
That means that those folks who are in the poorest part of Virginia, down in the southwestern corner, where I mentioned about Wise and the remote clinic, which is the biggest free clinic in Virginia, mm-hmm. that group is down in the 300 miles away zone.
Wow.
So, you know, we're talking real distance. We talked, I think, off air earlier, or maybe was it a previous program, about a young lady who was coming in here for chemotherapy.
Yes.
Once a month. And she came down on I titled the article on the blog, The Girl on the Midnight Bus, because she literally came in at night with a child. And she didn't have anybody in Springfield to keep the child.
Mm.
So she had to bring it. So she walked from there to the Red Roof, spent the night, got chemotherapy the next day, got back on the bus, and went home. That went on for 3 years.
Oh, my goodness.
But, Marcella, before that, she could not come. She had ovarian cancer. And by the time we got hold of her to put up in a hotel, her ovarian cancer was from stage 1 to stage 3, simply because she couldn't afford to come here.
Exactly. So I think that's a good time to mention again that obviously to function and to help these people, the Interfaith Humanitarian Sanctum needs your financial contributions or whatever other assistance. They need you to be aware of what Elisheva and Wade are trying to do, and they need your help. So let's once again give that website of how they can find out, how they can be of help to the two of you and to Sam as well.
It's three words, Marcello: Interfaith Humanitarian Sanctum. And you put it together with a triple W and .org on the end, interfaithhumanitariansanctum.org, and it'll come up, and on the homepage are all kinds of accesses across the top. We were delighted to be able to have this opportunity for the exposure, because the something about a what I call a silent charity. We're not known very well. We don't have direct communications with the people we help, and they don't know who we are except if they ask.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they'll be told, maybe at a hotel, these folks are helping you out, and they'll call. But we really function through social work. And who screens and approves that? We couldn't do this if we didn't know those things.
Yes.
You never know. So that's the reality of that. There have been some offshoots of things which we're kind of flexible with, working for food for Hospitality House, which is a part of the hospital, but they don't have a food budget. So, you know, there's a lot of people staying there that are indigent that really do need assistance there. So when we went to the Bama Works and asked them for a grant dedicated to that, that represents about 35% to 40% of our food need for,
yes,
for hospitality. So that's a big deal. And then some others are moving in. We're rather transparent. We put everything online. I mean, all the forms, the tax returns, that kind of thing is on there. We do not get paid. And we're fortunate that we're able to do this, but we do support the charity in a way that's a little bit different. The only religious aspect to it is our personal lives. And we do weddings, and as Ella Sheva has mentioned, and we allow a significant portion of every ministerial duty to be donated to the charity or through us. And we will take a portion of that and put it into the charity, because when you start something like this, you really do need something that you can know that has some growth potential to assist if there's some downtimes from not being able to get enough giving.
Of course. And speaking of growth potential, tell us about your hopes and plans for getting a farm and what's that all about?
Well, the farming aspect is, I guess, it's dear to my heart, because when I retired from the military and I became an organic farmer out in Washington, I was thrilled to be able to actually get away from a typewriter and military duties and raise things. And I didn't know anybody would ever buy anything that I put in the ground, but they did, and they bought it commercially by the four-star hotels. And I said, wow, this is something. They actually are buying something I raised.
Wow.
So we gained a reputation among the four-star type restaurants out in Seattle and even in New York City, but very few people order potatoes UPS, but that's how
yeah.
it is. You know, when you don't have a budget for feeding,
sure.
It's wonderful, but we were delighted to be received that way. And from that, there was an opportunity on the farm and the guest house to have people who were, I guess, in need of tough love.
Yes.
Who were addicts, and we put a lot of different kind of folks up during that 10-year period. And so we learned, you know, we can exist and put ourselves out. But it really wasn't so much that. Everybody seemed to have an opportunity, and we helped them find that. And we fed them, and they stayed and got off certain kinds of drugs. Not everybody, but there are always relapses. You kind of expect some of that. People who would come in there and say, no, I don't have a record with the sheriff or anything. And you find out, with every other mail delivery, there was a warrant or something.
Yes.
So you end up going to local judges and talking to them personally and saying, would you please drop this so I can help out here? And
wow.
they would actually do that. So we'd show up in a court, we'd be sitting there, and when the judge would say, would you please stand? Are you prepared not to do this anymore? And they would say, yes. And he said, okay, I'm going to give you a chance.
Yes.
But it's because there was an intervention by somebody.
Yes, yes.
And people have to know that. It doesn't matter whether you're in a food line and you're in line and somebody needs a dollar to finish out their food bill. It's one-on-one.
Yes.
Well, the farm here within the faith would also serve, if we had a few acres, not only to raise food for those in need, but to put up a few cabins for those family members who have to stay here for longer than just a night or two. It is expensive to put up somebody in a hotel long
term. Yes, yes.
So if we had a few cabins, or what I like to call like a kibbutz, where we can put them up, and at the same time let them have some downtime to you know, collect their thoughts and their emotions. That is really what we hope we can get to, that so the charity could sustain itself a little bit more independent and not be dependent so much on commercial lodging.
Very good. I understand. We're going to have to close for today. I hope everyone listening will visit the website www.interfaithhumanitariansanctum.org and find out all the wonderful things that the Reverends Ella Sheva and Wade Clegg are doing. Whether you need their help or want to offer to help or make a financial contribution, or hey, how about donating some acreage out there so that they're more able to help people who need lodging when they when a family member needs to be in the hospital and they are trying to maintain a household somewhere else and yet stay near the patient. It's challenging. I'll throw in, because I've many times I had to go to hospitals with my parents who are now deceased, and they're long hours when you wait, and I wasn't a person who needed the services of the Reverend Clegg, but just sitting by that bed and being afraid to leave the room to go get something to eat, there's just a lot of pressures for the people who have family and friends in the hospital and who are responsible for their care, and certainly people like our guests today go a long way to make that an easier process, or at least as easy as possible.
May I interrupt?
Absolutely.
To please remember what a wonderful conduit you are.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. Okay. We're going to close now for just our guests. We're going to say goodbye to the good reverends. This is, but we'll be back.
We all want to know who we are. If you're an astronomer, an astrologer, you're looking for meaning in the stars. If you're looking through a telescope or looking at a horoscope, you're looking for meaning in the stars. If you're looking at the supernova or the supernatural, you're looking for meaning in the stars. If you're looking at the logical or the mythological, you're looking for meaning in the stars. If you're studying physics or going to psychics, you're looking for meaning in the stars. If you're a scientist or a Scientologist, you're looking for meaning in the stars. Extraterrestrial. If you're trying to go to heaven or just trying to figure out how the heavens go, you're looking for meaning the stars. If you research the molecular, church or secular, doubt, if you flirt and you're checking her out, we're all just looking for the meaning to the matter. We all just want meaning into matter.
To the Reasonable Voice of Blog Talk Radio. But I've been so moved by our guests, the Reverend Elisheva and Wade Clegg, and the work that they do to help those who are trying to help family members and friends at the University of Virginia Medical Center by supplying those who support their family and friends who are from out of town with financial assistance for lodging and food and travel even, who must travel great distances to make certain their loved ones get the health care they need. I hope you will support them and allow me, instead of a panel discussion today, to offer an audio blog of my own. In advance, I thank you for joining us today at the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio, and I ask you to recommend us to all your friends. I am Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you become one of the reasonable voices heard around the world. Anybody here seen my old friend America? Where's America? Filibuster or exceptional? Regaining sense of decency or starving children? It's not just a question for presidents and members of Congress. It's the question for we the people. America's right uses fake patriotism to cover up American realities with Oz ridicule and programmed phony court-packing talking points to camouflage Trans-Pacific Partnership's New World Order at the expense of a child's food for thought. We can't fully comprehend the depth of where a stop-and-frisk America descends without recapturing the essence of the greatest we have been. The correct questions give us insight and expose the true enemies of the people, while right answers give us Millionaires Club Congress on vacation from leadership. Do you know where your member of Congress spends one-third of the time he should be working for America? It's the questions we're asked that have been our education and character development. And I've never even really been one of those great classroom teachers who mold minds and now protect lives at school 5 days a week, year after year. But I have worked with ages 12 through 80, including a few household names. And while I remember very few of my answers, their questions return for haunting replays all the time, like gun violence. Where is America? It's in the questions of children denied food and infectious health care answers from organizations like the Jefferson Area Board of Aging, not in congressional wizardry disappearing food stamps while making Kansas jokes. Answering real questions is a real necessity for real people to keep it real and off the right direction from following the yellow brick road. 50 years after Dallas, I was asked, what's polio? Before answering, I realized after curing this crippling disease, the right direction for America has been political, educational, affordable, health care, and food stamp assassination. Anybody here seen my old friend, the America that didn't deny food to our children? Well, it's been a great show. I hope you think so as well. This is The Reasonable Voice. In the studio with me today are technical support creative catalyst and spoken word poet Mr. Bernard Hankins, with Michelle Opperman and Daniel L. Garner, the literary duo and philosophical minds who created O.G. Rose. Thank you for joining us today and recommending us to all your friends. I am Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.